Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Talk They Hear You podcast, What Parents Are Saying, Prevention Wisdom, Authenticity, and Empowerment. This podcast is brought to you by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, also known as SAMHSA. Talk They Hear You is a national prevention campaign that aims to help parents and caregivers talk with their kids about the dangers and risks of underage drinking and other drug use. In this podcast, we will hear what's working and what isn't and what might be missing in our efforts to help kids navigate away from alcohol and other drugs. I'm Debbie Berndt, Director of Parent Movement 2.0, and I'll be your host for this episode. As a reminder, the views expressed here are not necessarily those of SAMHSA or the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. In today's episode, we are talking with Alice, a mom who has had experience in raising a drug-free kid. We're going to get her insights into this challenging endeavor. So let's get started. Hi, Alice. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Debs?
I'm good. So you have one child, and I understand that he's a really anti-drug kid, and that is something that's difficult to raise today. And we wanted to talk to you about what you think contributed to him not just choosing not to use alcohol and other drugs, but also being an outspoken advocate for not using.
I truly believe starting everything early is key. So as early as elementary school, talking about the physical harm and dangers of smoking or drinking alcohol at a young age, it'd be no different than teaching kids as they grow to look both ways before crossing the street or not running through a parking lot because a car might hit you. It's almost in the same breath like teaching them when you see someone smoking that although you can't see the damage right away, they're polluting their lungs and shortening their life. They have a higher risk of lung cancer or reducing their ability to play a sport well because of shortness of breath. So I feel like whenever you have the opportunity to guide them when they're young, it doesn't make it a big secret deal. It's just like when you see your child growing and in a dangerous situation, you would say, you know, oh, don't run up the descending escalator. I only think of that because that's what Mark did. And of course, he hurt his knee against the little sharp edges. But the same with drinking and drugs, just when the school starts to teach it, that you really talk about it, that it's going to hurt the development of their brains and their bodies, and consuming an adult drink is going to be harmful because you're still growing, right? And so just like any other dangerous thing, it's in that category.
It sounds like the school that he went to did some pretty active educational work with the kids. And it sounds like maybe they involved the parents.
Yes, that was really key. They started early, third or fourth grade. We went to a seminar first where they ran through what was going to be the exact same thing. So we all knew. And that really helped. So we were encouraged to talk with them at dinner time, or if they asked any questions, or bring it into the conversation. And this went on for a few weeks so that you had plenty of time to talk about it. And I think that makes an enormous difference.
Did you feel like their drug education program moved through the years, or was it just kind of a third and fourth grade thing? And then...
Oh, no, no. It actually was every single year. So I remember like third or fourth grade, it started out with showing just the basic, it was like a photograph of someone's lung who had been smoking and it was black. And it showed pictures of brain damage, you know, if you were of young people smoking a lot. So it started out with real visuals that the kids could really relate to and come home and say, oh my gosh, I saw a lung today of a person who's been smoking. But then as they got older, you know, to fifth, sixth, junior high grades, the program changed a bit too. It became a bit more comprehensive, more on how it affected their learning.
So really brain development and a little more scientific.
Yeah, right. Using substances will harm you and prevent you from your goals. I mean, they'd be so bold as to just really say that. So
I'm sure many parents that are listening wish that their schools were more active or more assertive and maybe did more of a comprehensive program. But I guess even if they're not, you still, as a parent, you can become educated and have conversations with your kids, and you can do the pacing and do the, what are we going to talk about in third and fourth grade? And what are we going to talk about in middle school? Our job as parents is never done, right? There's always something else that we can be helping our kids with.
I was going to say, they really emphasized repeating our beliefs and being very strong in them from third grade all the way through high school.
That is so insightful. And I know the Talk They Hear You program talks about that a lot. It's not one big conversation. It's a bunch of little conversations, and it's a continued dialogue. I know your son to be fairly social. Talk to us about the transition from elementary and middle school into high school, and how was he able to navigate the social scene, and did it change significantly? And how were you able to support him as a parent?
I think that starting from maybe his freshman year, because we changed schools and he came to a new high school without knowing anybody, I think that probably the social pressures, and along with that came the introduction of substance use. One thing I did want to mention is that in elementary school, the same time when you're talking about drugs and substance use, we were advised to tell our kids about peer pressure, define what it is, and that it's inevitable, you'll have it, and when it comes, how to deal with it, that as parents, we'll be there for you. It will mean that you'll sometimes have sad feelings, but you'll get through it. And so part of what the school emphasized was telling kids way in advance what peer pressure is. So I think that that helped when Mark started high school, because that's when you're forming these smaller subgroups of friends, right? And so sometimes you're going to be excluded if you're not one that is interested in trying substances, or have an older brother or sister who does use and is totally fine. He'd have kids that say, you know, my brother uses and he's totally fine. It's totally okay. So I think when you enter that social world, your kids need to recognize that as peer pressure. And then how do you deal with it? And then again, we're the most influential. So we need to teach them, there's certain times that you're gonna have to choose friends. How are the smartest ways to choose friends? And groups are gonna form because of drug use, or maybe groups form because you have similar academic likes, or you play the same sport, or you like music. Try to point out the other things that you'll relate to other kids while they're forming those groups. But I think the most important thing then is when you have your groups of friends, hopefully they're non-users, but that as parents that we try to plan active activities for them to do, because kids just love getting together. And if you can teach them early that there are these fun, healthy things to do as a group, versus hanging out and just drinking or smoking as a group, then they learn the right behavior and still have fun. So we would take groups of Mark's friends to the Cal football basketball games, or Warriors or Raiders or the A's games, things that you could bring friends to, and they'd have a really fun time.
I love that idea of helping kids connect and take ownership of their social life.
Right.
And, you know, when they're younger and they can't drive, that's one thing. And I know we all take our kids places when they can't drive. But I'm imagining that you and Mark probably had a lot of planning conversations. And I would imagine that Mark would have taken over that planning at some point in time. And actually, that would have been a real learning experience for him. It doesn't even have to be an activity or an event that you pay for, but, you know, maybe it's doing dinner or scavenger hunt or things like that. I could see him getting really creative.
Oh, yeah.
Did you find that that was the case?
Totally. I mean, when they're young, you'd see what they like to do. So when they're really young in elementary school, junior high, they loved Nerf guns. So you could plan a Nerf gun war at your house. And their part would be to call their friends, have them come over. But it's such a learned behavior to get a group of people together and do something. And I really think whether it was going to a football game or having a Nerf gun fighter, that he learned that. And that as he got older, it became older things, making dinners on a Friday night. And then when you're driving, go to a different restaurant, try a different restaurant, and go see a movie afterwards, or in the wintertime, ice skate and play mini golf. It gave him the tools to plan things with like-minded friends. And then that's your social being, and you don't feel left out because you have social activity.
I don't know how much we think about the practice of being social. And we know from a brain development standpoint that adolescents are very driven biologically to connect with their peers. And we could have a whole podcast on that. But I like how you described it as a learned behavior. You have to learn how to be social. And there's a logistics component to that. You know, how do you plan? How do you do things? And then there's the human connection part of that. And it's that awkwardness or that uncomfortableness when you're meeting new people or you're walking into a room that you don't know who's going to be there. And the opportunity as an adolescent to experience those uncomfortable situations without drugs and without alcohol, I think is some of the most powerful learning experiences kids can have. As parents, when we're really permissive with drugs or alcohol and or real tolerant of it, we're kind of robbing our kids of that opportunity to be uncomfortable for a minute and see what that feels like and then prevail, get through that discomfort and be like, oh, I'm fine. That wasn't so bad. And then that whole feedback system seems so powerful.
It is such a learned behavior. I mean, it starts in a sandbox when they're that little. Even when you're little and your child is crying and he says, so-and-so doesn't like me, or I remember Mark, his friend wanted to go on a really scary roller coaster and he was scared, right? So his friend's like, gosh, I'm not going to invite you anymore. You don't want to go on a roller coaster. But each of those instances is a time where we as parents can help them get through it. And I think that each one of those makes them stronger. So when they are in high school and dealing with people who want you to try and you don't want to try, you can get over that uncomfortableness of friends saying no, or it's not rejection. It's just the social process.
And in many cases, it's just wanting two different things, and that's okay.
Yeah. And teaching them that if somebody says no, if somebody doesn't like you, then that's okay. Your next step is to find somebody who does relate, who does play lacrosse, or who does like going to sports games. And then eventually, if you repeat this process over and over again, by the time you're in high school, junior high, senior, you have a little group of friends.
And you know what it feels like to be around people that you like to be around, even if that friend group changes, right?
Absolutely.
You know what the next one feels like. And most kids leave home after high school. So having that skill as you walk out into the world and being comfortable, it's not like the awkwardness always goes away, but knowing that the awkwardness is going to go away when you start to meet new people. I know a lot of parents that are very tolerant of their kids drinking in high school. And I wonder how you dealt with that as a parent and navigating parenting peers that were allowing their children to use when you weren't and your child didn't want to. So, was there anything from a parenting perspective that you would share with us?
Well, I think that Mark is really social. So he's a kid that's still going to want to go. So what I did was he always knew how I felt. And he always knew he could say no. And so in the beginning, I would drive him there. And he would go. And he would not drink. And at first, you know, he had a great time because he was being with kids his own age. But then I noticed as we progressed, it wasn't as fun for him. Because now you're in a group and you get there and everyone is smoking pot or having some alcohol. And of course, they're getting silly and everything's funny to them. And so after a while, it wasn't fun because he couldn't relate. So there was a natural decision to be made to not be friends with them, but he would rather hang out with a different group that could go and play mini golf or go try a new restaurant or play sports or something like that.
So it sounds like you didn't really have any conversations with those parents that were throwing the parties, which is completely appropriate, you know, not to, but am I hearing that right?
No, I mean, I knew them and I knew where they were coming from and I would openly speak with them. I don't judge them for it. I just don't agree. And so it was really important for Mark to know that in our house, we wouldn't allow that. But he did want to be with a group, and so he would go. And in their perspective, I mean, it's their way of protecting their kids. They just feel a lot safer if their kids are at home. They know where they are. They're experimenting and having a little fun, but they know what they're drinking. They know where they're at. For them, they're keeping them safe.
That's an increasingly common parenting perspective that we see, but it's rational. It makes sense why parents would think that. And it's one of the reasons why programs like Talk They Hear You and this podcast feel urgent is because that kind of thinking is not borne out in our science and in our research. And most parents don't understand that we have this whole body of research about what should parents tell their kids about drinking and what should we be doing. And in that research, if kids are drinking at home, they find consistently that they drink more when they're outside the home, they drive and they drink, and they drink more often, right? It's like it sets up a behavioral pattern that just expands really quickly and expands way beyond that night for most kids. And then the other thing we know, and you and I have talked about this, that adult addiction is now seen as a childhood onset disease. And 90% of adult addicts started using something, alcohol, marijuana, nicotine, typically, before they're 18. So getting this education out there feels really important. And that's not to say every kid's going to have a problem, because they're not. But you're just dialing up the risk of kids potentially having problems.
Well, and we're then no longer teaching them how to be social.
That's right. Right.
Like Mark, for himself, he would go and very quickly he would realize all of a sudden now this group can't give him the social satisfaction that he needs, because by him not using, he's not going to be laughing like they are. So it's far more, I mean, a really effective tool is to have activities again for them at all sorts of ages where they can experience fun and laughing and spend time.
I wanted to talk with you, Alice, about your Asian culture and if you think it has played a part at all in your parenting. You and I have talked that, especially around drugs and alcohol, parenting is parenting. It really doesn't matter. No matter what nationality, no matter what culture, we're all dealing with the same kind of set of issues. But the Asian family structure seems very strong, and I'm wondering how you perceive it and if you think it has played a part at all in your parenting.
Well, first of all, in America, Asian kids are going to use as well. They have the same pressures, right? But I think from a parenting perspective, the Asian family starts out with the kids understanding at a very young age that the parent is the only authority figure, right? So there's this, you know, I'm the authority and you're the child. And somehow they're able to accept that. And they're able to accept it because they understand that we're older, that we know more, and that our number one interest is their livelihood. So I think that's a really important thing for them to understand. It's not a relationship where if I don't want you, Mark, to do this, that you can give me the reasons why you want to and we compromise. In the Asian culture, it's going to be a relationship of, Mom, I want to do this because, and I would listen. And if it was no, it was just going to be no, because these things aren't good for you. And there's not a lot of compromising there. So again, when I say you need to start early, because as soon as they learn that behavior when they're young and they're going through it hundreds of times, I do think it is more helpful as they're older. Like for Mark, when he first started driving, I want to go to a rock concert with my friends. And I would ask the questions, you know, is there going to be drinking there? And he said, probably, but you know, I wouldn't. And I know he wouldn't, but I also would have to tell him, you know what, you're not at the age where you can protect yourself. So it's still a dangerous situation. So you can't go. And he's not going to be happy about that, but there's not a lot of negotiating.
Right.
Does that make sense?
That does make sense. I'm just thinking of that example. I'm sure Mark's been to concerts since. And I guess that just makes me think this is away from the family structure, but just there's an appropriate time and place. And parents should feel permission to arbitrate what that appropriate time and place is. And it may be different.
And with whom? I think in the Asian culture, it's very much because we're set up as authority, it doesn't always have to be the same logic. So if he wanted to go to a concert with this other group of friends, absolutely. I'll even drive you. We'll pick you up. So what that does for him is he wants to do these fun things. So he knows if he wants to do these fun things, he can't do it with this group. But he can do it with this group. And so again, it's how parents can influence that friends, choosing friends.
I like that because there is this feeling of, and I think we get it from, you know, social science and just the world out there that parents have to be consistent. I think that can trip us up sometimes. And I know parents that won't set rules or guidelines because they know they're not going to consistently, you know, apply them. And
right. That we Asians kind of have an advantage because it doesn't have to make sense. I mean, there's no sense in me saying you can go to this concert with these people and then not with these people.
Right. That going to concerts is not the consistency there.
Correct. Correct. Well, I do think there's a parallel to Asians in general, or, you know, I'm Chinese, right? So as soon as you can walk or toddle, you're already, you see this little 2-year-old toddler and you're like, my son's going to go to Princeton. So it's all about education from the time that they can toddle, right? And so education seems to be one of the key components that Chinese people say you need to grasp, and it's like your job, right? That you have to really work hard at it because that's what's going to give you your best chance for success. I do think most Chinese families are really around education. I don't think it's surprising that the group in general have more kids that are academically aware. On the flip side, with substance use, I grew up in a family with many other Chinese families were the same. There was no one even had wine at dinner, right? It's always tea. And nobody smoked, the parents. And they're so conscious of telling us not to do certain things because it'll hurt your brain and you won't be able to learn and excel in school and all that kind of stuff. And that'll keep you from reaching your dreams. So I do think having that over and over and over and over again in your family cultures also probably helps kids not want to. They're going to have something in the back of their brain saying, if I drink and I smoke, I might not get an A in my next test.
And the wrath of that is
right. Right. I mean, I can think of specific times too that I would think like that.
So there's going to be plenty of, I would imagine, Asian kids that would feel a lot of pressure by that.
Yes.
What do you think?
I think that there is a pressure for that. Another pressure that a lot of Asian kids would feel is if they live in a community where there's not a big balance of Asians or have the ethnic diversity, right? There's a pressure to fit in. And I don't think the emphasis on education is wrong. It would be healthier, I think, if we could take on some of the American culture of a family where we are interested in other things as well. It doesn't have to be just as important, but maybe just a tad below, whether it's sports and having Asian parents actually go and be happy to watch their kids play, not happy that they're the MVP. Sometimes I think we're too focused on accomplishments. And so the American culture of loving sports is not just because you're going to be the best, right? It's because it's a healthy place where you can learn every single life lesson.
It seems like the drive towards academics comes from the thing that you said early on, and I'm not sure I'm going to say it right, but this wanting the best for this child and wanting this child to thrive. And culturally, that's tied to academics. So it's coming from a really, sounds like, optimistic and benevolent place. And what you're saying, if we could just add to it, it's really interesting. As a basically just boring mutt American, I do kind of envy it a little bit. My own boundary setting with my kids was successful in some places and very laxed in other places. And my children were able to say a lot of things to me that someone on the outside would look at that and go, that was so disrespectful. How is that child getting away with that? And it all kind of worked out in the end. And I think it was part of my personality to allow that. And I think every family and every parent has to find that authentic place for them.
Right.
But I kind of am a little envious. I mean, wow. It's not because I said so, but it's like, no, this is the authority and this is how you are respectful to people. My kids got that in other ways, but I don't know. I'm kind of envious of the structure.
It is a balance though. I mean, there were plenty of times where I would just say no, but in your mind, you're still having to balance. You can't say no to everything. You are picking and choosing and making sure if he's, I guess it's just making a conscious effort to make sure he does have the balance of social connections. I think that that's key. So there's a lot of things that he'd want to do that you could see them getting into trouble. So you just say no. But then I think as a parent, I tried to help him either organize or experience something similar, but in a safer way.
One of the things I've always said about parenting is that it does force you to grow up. I mean, they're just, you have to evolve. It's like evolve or die. These kids just make you examine your beliefs. I mean, just what you said, you can't say no to everything. It's so easy to want to just say no to everything for any kind of reason, everything from something's unsafe to I just personally can't deal with any more stuff right now. And nothing to do with them. But in that moment, you have to go, okay, oh, I have to be a parent again. You know, I have to, you know, look at what's really important here and make a decision. There's a lot to this parenting stuff, huh?
A lot. And especially now, I mean, parents, you're working all week. There'd be times that the weekend's coming and I'm sitting there going, the last thing I want to do is plan something for my kid.
Or help my kid plan something, even if they, you know, are doing the majority of it.
Exactly.
Is there anything about being an immigrant? Because you're not, you're first generation. Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, but your parents were immigrants.
Yeah.
Anything else culturally that you think helps you in your parenting or impacts it at all?
I mean, I think what helped us more in my generation, which is not going to be as influential for Mark's, is because they were immigrants, their life story starts out with nothing. In essence, they have come with nothing and made something wonderful for us kids. And so there is a huge sense of responsibility to make them happy too, in the only way that you can, which one way is to do well in school, and another way is to not use substances. And in the ways that we could as kids make them happy was our way of saying thank you. But it's interesting because I wasn't, you know, how you hear the stories, I walked a mile to school with no shoes and, you know,
right.
That's probably more American, but
right.
I didn't grow up that way. And neither is Mark. I do think the hardworking and respectfulness of my generation comes from that kind of history.
To honor the history and to honor their sacrifice, your parents' generation.
Yeah, the efforts they made, yeah. And the life they built for us, the opportunities that we have, that really kept me from ever wanting to use drugs or drink.
Well, this has been a really fantastic conversation. We always are excited and honored when we get to talk to parents, just parents doing the job of parenting and looking again, like we say, at what works and what doesn't. Your insights and sharing with us has been really valuable.
Oh, thanks. I don't know. We just all try the best that we can.
Right? Absolutely. And we hope that we can help more parents understand that this can be a real struggle. And we are just all trying to do the best that we can. And we hope that it's encouraging to keep fighting the fight.
I do think one thing that I realized that is helpful is it's not forever. Like if you could try really hard as a parent within 3 to 4 years of taking on the pressure and all the emotions and everything. And every time you're tired from work and you don't want to do so, but you do it just for a few years, I think it makes a difference to help your kids through those hard social years.
That's such a great reminder. And it's just making me think I'm actually with my 23-year-old daughter right now. And I was walking in the neighborhood and there were all these young 20-year-olds at this incredibly cool looking bar and it looked like so much fun. And I just thought, you know, this is when you want them to be drinking. And maybe you don't.
Yes. No, I totally know what you're
right?
saying.
This is the appropriate time for that when they're older, when they have their brains better developed, when they know how to connect socially. And this cocktail is just a minor part of the equation instead of 100% of the equation. I just felt the appropriateness of that.
Right. There is an end in sight. I do feel as they're getting older, I know his judgment is better. I know he has more control over his body. I know he has all sorts of things. But I think high school is the time where you just don't want to let up. Get them through those years.
So that they can really thrive and have fun in their 20s. It's a great perspective. So thank you so much for being with us. We want to remind all of our listeners that all Talk They Hear You materials, including this podcast, can be found on the Talk They Hear You website, which is talktheyhearyou, all spelled out, .samhsa.gov. And SAMHSA is SAMHSA. .gov. Please share this site and this podcast with your friends. The more we can be in conversation with each other, the better for everyone, especially our kids. And we want to hear from you. Would you like to be on our show? Do you have stories to share or tips or techniques that have worked or not worked for you as a parent? Do you have questions for us or any feedback for topics or improvements of any kind? We know that your input will help us design the most useful interviews possible. For any of this, please contact us at whatparentsaresaying@gmail.com. Again, spelled out the words, whatparentsaresaying@gmail.com. Thank you all for joining us, and we'll see you next time.